I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. On the show today, we have a couple of different performers. We'll open with flutist Rebecca Johnson, who is the professor of flute, instructor of flute at the Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. She'll be doing a little playing for us in the first half hour. And in the second, guitarist Rodney Jones, who was in town last evening for a performance at the Iron Post in Urbana, and is also here to do some speaking for the State Conference of Ekankar, which is on the University of Illinois campus. He has played with a staggering variety of jazz, blues, pop, and R&B artists, and we'll hear a little bit about that, but mostly we'll hear about some of his own sort of spiritual approach to music making. That's coming up in the second part of the show. Flutist Rebecca Johnson, guitarist Rodney Jones, both on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Foundation Hospital, Dr. Yuretz Oliphant discusses preconditions, and I am going to actually begin everything I just said again because I noticed that we had a little problem in the studio. The music you just heard was by Irving Fine. It's called 1-2 Buckle My Shoe, played by Chamber Music Palm Beach, and you heard it in Live and Local on FM 90.9. And our programs are made possible by Carle Foundation Hospital. Dr. Yuretz Oliphant discusses preconditions for bariatric surgery candidates Friday, July 31st at 7 p.m. at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute. Registration is at carle.org/bariatric-event. I'm Kevin Kelly, and on the show today, in the second half, we have guitarist Rodney Johnson and Rodney Jones. I'm getting the two names mixed up here twice now. Rodney Jones, first part of the show, is in fact Rebecca Johnson, who is instructor of flute at the Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, currently a doctoral candidate in the flute performance at the University of Illinois, studying with Jonathan Keeble. And she's joining us on the show mostly as an excuse to do some playing. Fair enough?
Yep.
And you're getting ready for a recital at some point. Is this... You're going to do some solo flute things for us.
Yeah, I'll be doing some of these in the fall at various universities around the state and such for short recitals and master classes at studios at other universities. But I'll probably do my regular faculty recital for the year in January, which will include probably some of this stuff, but then, of course, some accompanied works and chamber works as well.
So are these appearances around recruiting ventures on behalf of Eastern?
To some extent. I mean, we do this sort of thing all the time just as a way to get to know the professors at other universities better and get to know their students. Perhaps they might be graduate students someday. It also helps us when we know the professors better because they are a lot of times the private teachers in the communities as well. And so, you know, your student growing up in Bloomington Normal may or may not actually want to stay and go to Illinois State. They may be looking for a university somewhere else in the state. So our relationships do help with recruiting in that way.
Okay. And you've been at Eastern a couple of years now.
Yep. I'll be starting my third year this fall.
And how does it work for you to be teaching at Eastern, and also, I presume, trying to finish up your doctorate at the university. That's a not uncommon situation.
It isn't uncommon, that's true. And I was very fortunate to start my job at Eastern after one full year of coursework at U of I, which, as most people can calculate, means there was still quite a bit left of the degree. I have at this point finished up all the coursework and doing basically one course per semester, and will be doing my exams and dissertation with an optimistic graduating date of next May.
Well, I hope that you do well with that. It seems to be not uncommon either to have folks in this situation specifically at Eastern. I mean, I've known a number of people who are either present or recent graduate students, usually doctoral students at the University of Illinois, who are also teaching at Eastern. I know that you're the orchestra director there.
Richard Rossi.
Richard Rossi. Yeah. I'm going back to Rodney Jones and Rebecca Johnson and Richard Rossi started out that way, and
yep.
And others as well. Is that something, do they come up here and say, you know, who do you have? We have an opening, or do you just hear of an opening and you go down there? How did it work for you anyway?
For me, it was an emergency hire situation in the middle of the summer when the previous person had taken a leave of absence that he announced in May. So there wasn't time to do a really huge national search. And so what they tend to do is send out messages to anybody who might have a potential person to recommend and say, send us people. And they also, because of this situation, needed somebody to teach at camp that summer. So I went and taught at camp and interviewed and ended up with the job. And it seems to happen with some regularity because there's this trickle-down effect of college teaching each year where people move on to new jobs, but they may or may not know where they're going in enough time to have that sort of thing, to have a full search possible for everybody everywhere. So I think in this case, the U of I to Eastern connection is proximity as much as anything else. This is the closest large university to there. So probably one of the places to turn. We also have a lot of faculty members who are recent or fairly recent graduates of Indiana University.
At Eastern.
Yeah, at Eastern, yeah.
Right. Well, it certainly worked out well for you so
far.
And why don't we hear, since you're here as much to play as talk, let's hear one of the choices you brought along. Where would you like to start?
I'll start with the Sarabande from J.S. Bach's Partita for solo flute. This is the third movement, and it's an A minor, very beautiful singing sort of tune. So I'll play that.
Was this
first.
Originally for flute?
It was, yes.
Okay.
For transverse flute as well.
The sideways played flute.
Exactly, not for recorder. So
I'll ask you about that maybe when we're done. This is flutist Rebecca Johnson here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. A little Bach for us today.
Thank you.
Beautiful sound. Nicely done, Bach.
Thank you.
Sarabande from one of his suites. Of course, Bach has written so many suites for so many different solo instruments, and people have transcribed them for different instruments, which is why I asked earlier whether that one was originally for flute or not. I really didn't remember. And you said it was for transverse flute as opposed to?
To for recorder.
To recorder. Was the sideways flute, which is what that means, was that just coming into its own right around Bach's time? Do you know?
As far as what I know, which is not a complete extensive flute history, at the time in the Baroque era, it was sort of equal, and there's a lot of debate, especially in Vivaldi's works, about which flute they were actually written for, because the notation was really vague. They sometimes just called everything a flute. And part of the way we know is keys, because the recorder played better in sort of more flat side keys like F and B flat, whereas the flute was a D and A and sort of sharp key side. So.
And at the time, both of them, of course, were made of wood.
Right.
Whether you held it forward, right, the recorder, or sideways. And somewhere along the line, it got to be made of metal.
And got keys. And
yeah. Have you ever played a wooden flute?
I've tried. But part of the problem is that without our key alignment, it's actually really hard to cover those holes. And so people who play Baroque flute have a very sort of different need for really spread out hand position and stuff that's difficult for my small hands.
So most people who play Baroque flute probably play it a lot.
I think so, yeah, because it's a very different, all the holes are directly on the body, and there's only the three of them for the finger on each hand and then thumb, and one key for your right hand pinky.
So as with so many other things, if you want to play it well, you have to practice and play it a lot.
That's true.
And that'll come up in our conversation, if I remember, with Rodney Jones later in the hour, guitarist, who was a master teacher as well. What got you interested in teaching? Have you been teaching, were you teaching as a student?
Yeah, I started my first private student when I was in ninth grade. And I don't remember exactly how that happened. I think it was sort of a family friend who had a daughter who went to a school that didn't really have much of a music program, but she was playing flute in her school band. It was just really small. And they said, obviously she needs some help, and you know what you're doing a lot more. And my mom actually related this story last weekend when I went to see my parents, that she would hear me teaching these kids when I was in high school down in the basement while she was teaching piano students upstairs. And the thing that impressed her most was how much they improved sound-wise from the very beginning, because what I was always taught and the way I've always taught is based on a very strong principle that if you don't sound beautiful, no one's going to want to listen to you. So I've always started there, and I think teaching is just so rewarding, and I learned from such a young age how wonderful it was to get to make a difference in people's lives and really help them with something that's important to them. And it's actually been my career goal all along the way from when I started college.
Yep. How do you teach sound?
On the flute, the primary thing is always, with any new student, is usually, you're not using enough air. And that
sounds like that's true for brass players as well.
It is. On flute, it's more of a volume of air issue, because so much of it doesn't go in. And also, in like middle school bands, the flute players are in the front, and there tend to be a lot of them. So they tend to get a lot of being told they're loud by their band directors, because they are, from their perspective. And they tend to not learn to sing out the sound in that group setting as well. So I do a lot of work on that. And then I'm a very specific teacher of embouchure and space in the mouth and any technical thing that I can tell somebody that I think is going to improve the sound.
And for those who don't know the term embouchure, it's basically how you form your mouth to make the right sound. You can do it yourself by just the old blow on a bottle thing.
Right. That's the basic place we start.
Yeah. Is that right? Do you start with bottles?
Usually we just start with the head joint and do some this sort of sound, because there's no resistance and it's very easy to blow freely. But the way I actually teach it from the beginning is a put your mouth on the instrument and try to just let the air open your lips rather than thinking, here we're going to make an embouchure, because that tends to result in tension, which is basically no tension is useful in the long run.
Yeah, that's true for singing. That's true for just about anything musical, playing a violin, acting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we all tend to tend towards it in many things we do.
Well, if you're going to be a performer, then that means nerves, and then different, that translates for different people in different ways. The program you brought along to sample for us has one of the composers who has become, I don't want to say my favorites, but I really like his music a lot, and he was new to me several years ago, was Astor Piazzolla. I don't know if that's who you were planning to play next.
Yes, actually.
But would you mind doing one of the pieces there?
Sure. Piazzolla was an Argentinian composer whose main instrument was bandoneon?
Bandoneon.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of an accordion.
Type thing, yeah. And he won a major composition prize, went to study with Nadia Boulanger in Paris, and tried to learn to write classically. And she said, are you crazy? Your gift is really here in the tango, like you've been trying to write all along. So he went back to writing sort of everything as a stylized tango. And this is a set of 6 tango etudes, which he did write for flute, but they've been transcribed for violin and maybe for other instruments as well. But I'll play number 3, which is my favorite as a concert piece. And it's quick and fun.
And you can't beat that. It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Rebecca Johnson, my guest this part of the show, playing solo flute, music by Astor Piazzolla. The Music by Astor Piazzolla from a set of etudes for the flute, played here by Rebecca Johnson, who is flute instructor at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, heard here on Live and Local. I wonder what there is about the flute that seems to lend itself pretty well to solo playing. I mean, you don't hear a lot of solo oboe or solo clarinet for some reason or another. Any idea?
I'm not sure, though. I do think that there's a couple things that could contribute. I think there's a larger body of repertoire for flute than for the other woodwinds, partly because it came back as a solo instrument or came into being as a solo instrument sooner than those others did, regaining popularity after the Romantic era where none of the woodwinds were big enough for what composers were trying to do. Flute players are also really good at congregating and having festivals and conventions and commissioning things. And there is so much music written for that. In fact, one of the other pieces I brought to play was a commission by the National Flute Association for a competition. That's the charanga, which is includes a bunch of extended techniques. And I think that's actually probably a lot of it, because for these competitions and for various things, people want a piece that people can maybe enter the competition without having to have an accompanist to record or whatever.
It's
to save time and
that
money.
Way too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and you were an assistant program chair for one of the recent National Flute Association conventions. It had to have been fun.
It was. It was fun. It was also a huge amount of time.
I was going to add that it was probably a whole lot of work.
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Well, I wish we had a whole lot more time. Speaking of on the show today, since you've mentioned this commissioned piece and the idea of extended techniques. There's lots of instruments that you can do things with them other than just play normally, and flute seems to have an abundance of those.
It sure does.
Why don't, by way of introduction to some of these, just play the piece. What is it?
It's called charanga. It's by Michael Colquhoun, I think is how you might say his name, but I'm not sure. He teaches in New York at a small college and is, I believe, Mexican originally, and this has a lot of stuff. So if you have any questions, I'd love to answer them later.
Rebecca Johnson on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Thank you. I have to say that when you said extended techniques, I didn't know what the piece was going to be like. I was thinking, oh, it's going to be sort of whacked out and modern, and it's a nice. It's got a lot of rhythm to it and a sort of a funky beat. In fact, it reminded me almost immediately of this record that we had when I don't even know how my family ended up with it, because this was not a group that anybody really listened to in my family. It was Jethro Tull.
Right.
And what was the name of the flutist with Jethro
Tull? Anderson.
Ian Anderson.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing some of those kinds of things.
Especially the singing and playing at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So a little humming, and you at home can experiment with your with your beer bottle or your wine bottle or your water bottle and do some of this stuff. And you can use extended techniques that instrument. We were listening to Rebecca Johnson. The music again was?
Charanga by Michael Colquhoun, I think.
And we're guessing at the name.
At the pronunciation.
Yeah. Well, and I would love to actually have you demonstrate a bunch of those and tell us exactly what we're doing, but we'll have to save that for another program.
Hope so.
The time has passed quickly. Thank you very much for coming on Live and Local.
You're welcome.
Rebecca Johnson is a flute instructor at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, and we'll be playing some of those pieces around the state and eventually on a recital, which you're welcome to advertise on this show.
Thank you.
It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Coming up in a few minutes, conversation with guitarist Rodney Jones, who was at the Iron Post last night in Urbana and giving some talks through the weekend for the Ekankar Institute. This is FM 90.9. Dizzy Gillespie and his band, A Night in Tunisia, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Rodney Jones actually got his start in jazz with Dizzy Gillespie, and he went on to play with a lot of other well-known jazz artists, Hank Jones, Milt Jackson, Quincy Jones, Roy Eldridge, the Manhattan Transfer, as well as a lot of pop legends, Madonna, Billy Joel, Stevie Wonder, Phil Collins, R&B as well, Chaka Khan, Lauryn Hill, Maceo Parker, Queen Latifah, and blues, Ruth Brown, Carla Thomas, Albert Collins, many others. I can't even get into all of the experiences he has had, and nor did we in our conversation earlier today, from which we're going to hear an excerpt, somewhat randomly chosen, out of that wonderful conversation. We'll air the complete interview on a later date. Rodney Jones was in town last night to perform at the Iron Post in Urbana and is here for some workshops and talks for the Ekankar Institute, which is having its state conference at the University of Illinois. And at the end, I'll give you a phone number if you're interested in finding out some of his appearances. But we had this conversation just earlier today, and I started out by asking him how he manages, if he could even describe how he manages, to go back and forth so easily between all of the styles that he tends to play, with pop, R&B, blues, jazz, various other commercial types of music, and this was his answer.
Number one, it comes to really listening. You know, really deep listening for me has allowed me to hear the essence of what the music is. Now, are there country guitar players that can play rings around me playing country guitar? Specialists that only that? Yeah, there are. There's no question of that. Are there country guitarists that are going to play with more feeling than me? No. Because where I go in listening to the music, it's the same place they go. And it's the heart of the music, the essence of what matters in that music is the deep feeling and deep resonance of that. That's not a function of technique. That's a function of deep listening and tuning in. Tuning in, letting go, and letting it out. And so that's the authenticity. You know, I played with Shamika Copeland and was Ruth Brown's musical director for 20 years. And you know, we played rhythm and blues all over the world. And people would hear me. And, you know, I remember once one guy wrote a review and said, yeah, he sounds like he's starting to get into jazz. It's obvious to hear he's a blues guitar player, but I can hear a little jazz inflection. Well, little do they know, you know, I'm a jazz guitar player who can play blues. But to me, I took this as a real compliment because when I play the blues, I'm really there. I'm not faking it. I'm not pretending to be. When I play country music, I'm really there. I'm listening to what is the essence of the music. And I find that that's what people relate to. I've never been to a concert and said, oh, that guy, what a magnificent D minor chord he played. And I never think that. I think, wow, you know, did I feel something? Was I fed? Was my spirit fed? When I left the concert, did I feel like I had a meal? Did I eat something? Did he share something that was satisfying, that left me better than I was when I walked in that place, or at least changed me in some way that's in a positive way? And so I think that in my career in music, you know, when I was working with Maceo Parker, like I played on James Brown's last record date. You know, and here I am in the studio, and it's James Brown's last record date. And, you know, James Brown is like one of my icons and all-time hero. And he loved me. You know, well, what let me do that? Because when I was there for James Brown, I was there for James Brown. I wasn't thinking Lena Horne. I wasn't thinking Trish Yearwood. I was 100% James Brown. This is the benefit of training the attention. In Ekankar, which is my spiritual teaching, it's called spiritual exercises, which basically means, you know, how to control the attention and to put it where you're going to get the best spiritual benefit. And I use that technique in music. When I'm with James Brown, I'm fully present as James Brown's guitar player, and that's it. One morning, I recorded with Liza Minnelli in the morning, Chaka Khan in the afternoon, and they did a gig with the avant-garde jazz saxophone player Hemiet Bluett at the Vanguard. And my objective was, you know what, on each of those things, Liza Minnelli would only think I played. And Chaka Khan would think I only knew. Hemiet Bluett would think it's all. I wasn't faking it. You know, I guess I was being a sideman in the sense of playing different styles. But for me, I'm looking for what is the heart of that, and is it real? What I don't enjoy so much is playing with fakers, people that are doing it only for the money, only to pretend to be something else. That's not my I do that as well, because I do have to eat, contrary to popular belief. But I find that the joy in sidemanning and playing these different styles, and what lets me to do it, is listening to the heart of the matter. Look, I can't discuss aeronautics with a pilot, but I understand enough about flying to have some basis of common experience. I can understand someone who's spent years learning to do something. I've spent years learning to play the guitar. So is there something in common with a person who spends 1,000 hours learning to fly and a person who spends 1,000 hours learning the instrument? Absolutely. We have something to talk about. And so that's how I feel when I play different types of music.
What I was really interested to know when you were talking earlier about jazz with a tinge of blues and the other way around. Mm-hmm. I've often heard it said that real jazzmen can play blues well, and if that other jazzmen will judge other players on whether or not they can play the blues, mm-hmm. and wonder if we might have something.
Yeah, I can
have a little blues.
We can do that. I think that's true. I just mentioned that. I think that's true, and that's the way it's been. That was the conventional wisdom of jazz. I think that's changed somewhat now. For a generation, a younger generation of musicians, the blues has become less important. I see that in the students I teach. It's not that it's unimportant, but it's more back to bringing jazz as a high art form rather than touching those kind of common points. I make no judgment as to whether that's a good thing or not. You know, it ties into the old joke. You know, what's the difference in a jazz guitarist and a blues guitarist? A blues guitarist plays 3 notes in front of 1,000 people. A jazz guitarist plays 1,000 notes in front of 3 people. you know, there's a reason for that. The reason being the blues is a simpler language, story form, more universal, touches the heart at a very core essence. Jazz requires a lot more mental power, a lot longer to get to the point, and speaks of a world that a lot of people don't live in. More people live in the world of getting up and working every day and finding what's the purpose of their life than I looked over the Grand Canyon and here's the beautiful vista I saw and I'm going to play that in music for you. Both are valid, but one is much more universal than the other.
So the first is the blues, the second is a little more the more ethereal nature of jazz. Right?
Correct, or the intellectual side of jazz. Yeah.
We're talking with Rodney Jones here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly.
So you want some blues?
Want some blues.
Okay.
Love to hear some.
We got blues.
Hear a blues.
We can do blues. Thank you.
I can understand what somebody was saying with a lot of jazz in that blues there.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I was waiting for quite a while. Where are those blues chords? They were colored quite a bit.
Yeah, I was trying to give some variety to it.
Yeah. Well, you certainly did that. I enjoyed that. We're listening to and talking. Oh, here we go.
That's also the other blues. That's blues.
You can do a little of everything, obviously.
No, that's all I've been told.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at your resume. That's enough right there to say you can do a little of everything. We're talking with Rodney Jones and Live and Local on FM 90.9. He is in town this weekend to be guest speaker for the 2009 Ekankar Annual State Conference, which is being held at the University of Illinois. You said early on in this conversation that you've been on a spiritual journey really ever since you started to play.
Mm-hmm.
How did that journey lead you to Ekankar? And maybe for those such as myself who really don't know much about it, tell us a little bit about Ekankar.
Well, I will. Well, Ekankar is known as Ekankar, the religion of the light and sound. For me, it has been an amazing toolkit, a way to get answers for myself about what I should do. How can I have a connection with spirit, with God, with life that's meaningful, that allows me to live a life I want to live in the way I want to live it, in a fulfilling way? Modern day Ekankar was founded in 1965 by a man named Paul Twitchell. Now, Paul Twitchell was a wonderful, gifted writer and a researcher, spiritual researcher, who went all over the world looking for what teachings of spirit, what did the world's religions have in common? If you take away the fat, you take away the cultural trappings, you take away the contextual things, what is the essence of truth? And he went and studied all these religions. He found, well, you know, there are some things there that religions talk about an inner light or a spiritual light, and they talk about the sound or sing hymns or use chants as a way of developing spirituality. And then the second question he raised was, well, are these deep spiritual experiences that the founders of religions have, you know, that their books are written about, Paul on the road to Damascus and Moses with the burning bush and these sort of things, the angel Gabriel, are these experiences for only the spiritual elite, or could the average person living an everyday life have a way of having a spiritual experience? Is that actually a possibility? Is there a unity, something that brings synchronicities and dreams and waking dreams and coincidences and out-of-body travel and soul travel and intuition? Is there something that ties those together, or are they just sort of random occurrences that we attribute to mysterious things that happen in life? And what he discovered was there is something that brings them together. And furthermore, he discovered that there were teachers that have been available for thousands of years that show how those pieces work together. Ekankar is not a belief system, because it's a way to experience truth, not believe in truth. The idea is that each of us has the ability to know for ourselves the answers we look for, and that we have within us the answers to all the questions we would ask. So there's spiritual exercises, tips, tools, techniques that help us open ourselves to this flow of spirit, which is referred to as light and sound, because we can be aware of it, experience it as an inner light, and hear it as an inner sound. And once we have this contact with spirit, we can then follow the clues and the leads as it begins to point us in the directions for our next spiritual step. So for me, it's really been a wonderful way of getting the same type of personalized instruction that I try to emulate and mirror with my students. I mean, they come to me, and I listen to them, and I look at what they bring, and I say, this is what I can offer in terms of here are your next steps and how you can get to the goal you're trying to get to. What an astounding concept that there's a spiritual way to do that as well.
So what about you as a guitarist made the Ekankar people decide to bring you in as a guest speaker?
Well, I've been interested in Ekankar now for more than 30 years. I've been a student, a member of Ekankar, a member being a person who's actively studying this spiritual toolkit, you know, actively trying, using it. It's like a member being a student that comes and takes my course with me at Juilliard and practices what I, you know, and then says, oh, here's what I'm working on. I say, oh, we'll try this and let's fine-tune this. That's what a member does spiritually. So I think they brought me here because, number one, as you can tell, I'm not want for words. I enjoy talking about it. I'm passionate about the spiritual journey because, for me, it's given the music I play a purpose. You know, it's given it a purpose beyond just music for me. And that makes life a joy to live every day. So I was invited because I'm passionate about music. I'm passionate about Ekinkar. I'm passionate about spiritual growth and those people that are looking to take a spiritual step, you know. And it doesn't have to be through Ekinkar, but I think people that are really genuinely looking for answers to the why of life, why things happen the way they are, they're led along certain corridors. I do believe that. Doors open. You know, as Rumi said, you know, for years I knocked on the door to heaven, and then I discovered when it opened, it was opening from the inside. And I find that to be true. So I enjoy meeting people that are actively seeking to take another step, to be a better person and to find their next spiritual step, to find a deeper meaning to life than just getting up and going to work and coming home and having some kids and saying, well, that's it. And you know, you live, you die, and I guess it meant something. I was never able to accept that. I always had a deep knowing, and perhaps a gnawing is another way of saying it, that there had to be more to life than that. And when I met an Ek master, you know, an Ek master, Ek being a word for spirit, it's just a word, Ek is another way of saying spirit, but a person who had spiritual skills, who could actually give me guidance, it was astounding because I recognized immediately because I knew the value, going back to my early teacher, Bruce Johnson, you know. Well, 3 years later, I was able to play with Dizzy Gillespie. Why? He showed me how to practice, how I should practice, in what order I should practice, and then said, now go out and play the music you want to play. And the Ek masters have done the same for me. They had, you know, they didn't tell me what to do. They said, but, you know, if you're interested in mastership, if you really want to work on yourself, here's some things you can do. You know, the HU, which is a spiritual exercise. It's sung like HU, like that. Simple thing. You know, like I show students simple picking exercises, and they're like, that's going to do it? I'm like, well, try it for 6 months. 6 months later, I'm like, oh, incredible. My facility's going up 1,000%. Just that little thing. I'm like, yeah, I know. The spiritual exercises are like that, too. So, you know, practice doesn't make perfect, but it does make better. And so through spiritual exercises and really good instruction, I was able to build the spiritual house and the musical house that I wanted to. I've never been told what to do. I've never been told what to believe. But I've been shown doorways and avenues and vistas and horizons. I've been shown what's possible. And then when the doing was always left to me to decide, what did I want to do? What was I willing to give for what I would want? What's my level of acceptance? You know, I get students who say, I really want to, I had a student come to me. This is not a joke. I had a student come to me last year, a very well-known pop singer who said, I've decided, you know, I really want to like master jazz. I really want to get like my master jazz. Like, okay. She said, well, you know, I got about 6 months before my next record. Can you do it? Okay, so I'm like, okay, you want to master jazz in 6 months? No, we're not going to, probably not going to do that. You know, we'll point you the right direction. So, you know, anything worth having, my experience has been, requires some effort. And a lot of times it's in the effort that the most growth takes place. In the same way, you know, when you exercise, your muscles actually gain strength and grow in the resting phase. When they recover, it's where they're growing. Yeah. I don't know what I was talking about, but sounded good.
Well, I'm glad that something led you to Studio F here at WILL on Live and Local, and we have just a couple of minutes maybe to hear another tune that you think works particularly well on this guitar that you were able to bring today.
Okay, let's see, what would that be? This is a song, it's on that CD, or that download, I should say, from the Journey of Soul. It's called Grace. And for me, it was really about, you know, I thought of, like, so many people that really helped me. You know, I think gratitude has an important role in all the stuff we're talking about musically and otherwise. And I realized that, you know, without the person who taught me my ABCs, I couldn't read or write or do any stuff I'm doing. And I don't even know her name. And never thanked her. And then I said, well, I wonder how many things like that are there in my life that, like, I've really been helped, or someone has, you know, opened a door or recommended me for a job or invited me to be here in Illinois to give a talk. And I don't really know how it happened, but someone opened a door, someone extended a hand and helped me. And I really had a deep sense of gratitude for that. So I wrote this song called Grace, which really is about being grateful for all the seen and unseen ways that we get help taking our next step, whether it's in music or in the worlds of spirit or in being a better parent or a mate or coworker with your colleagues at work. Just all the help we receive that we're not really aware of, but that we help get anyway. So that's this grace for that.
A tune called Grace by Rodney Jones, played by Rodney Jones here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you very much for coming in and joining us in the studio today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And that was an excerpt from a much longer conversation that I had with Rodney Jones earlier this morning, and we will air that complete conversation and a few other performances from it later on Live and Local, sometime probably in August. He was in town last evening to play at the Iron Post in Urbana and will be giving workshops for the Ekankar Annual State Conference. If you're interested in attending any of those on the University of Illinois campus, they are free and open to the public. You should call Dennis Roberts at 217-344-0069, 344-0069. It's going to be a mostly sunny afternoon with a high temperature of 86 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a chance of thunderstorms after midnight, the low 64. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and breezy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high around 82. And Sunday, partly sunny with a chance of a passing shower or thunderstorm and a high of 78. We're at 81 degrees, coming up on 101. This is WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana. Operating translators, W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.